What is up, everyone? Welcome into the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. Thrilled that you are with us this week. I am your co-host alongside Eric Edholm, my partner in crime.
Hi.
And we've got a divisional round preview to get to. But before we do that, Eric, I'd love to know how your day is going and what's jumped out at you in another wild week in the NFL.
I have a hard time juggling everything here. We've got coaching hires. We've got assistants moving places. We've got, you know, draft stuff rolling through here. And, oh, by the way, a playoff game. So, yeah, I mean, it's obviously been a big week. You know, the Bears, I know you guys do your Chicago Bears podcast as well. They kick off the head coaching hires, which is interesting. I didn't necessarily think that was going to be the way it went. But, you know, to their credit, they got their guy and they got off to a start. And now we'll just see how the rest of this unfolds.
And, Eric, I think getting off to that fast start has allowed them to maybe get some of the assistance that they want and are starting to get some nice reviews from around the league. Not that that matters, but it's always a question with the young head coach how he's going to fill out his staff. And some of the early returns have been encouraging. Now, I'm going to cheat a little bit. If you guys want to hear Bears, well, you got to go listen to the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast.
Right.
We've got 31 other teams and about a million different angles to try and get to with you guys here today in about the next half hour or so. So, of course, go check out the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. Check out our fantasy football podcast, all of our work podcast-wise over at iTunes, and, of course, all of our other stuff at profootballweekly.com. We're rolling out end-of-season awards this week. We've got playoff previews. We've got all kinds of awesome stuff up there for you to enjoy. But today, Eric, my head has been spinning with all the coordinator moves. The Bears are the only one that filled their head job so far, but it seems like every 5 minutes a coordinator is either switching cities or re-upping. And I think the latest, I hope I'm safe in saying this, well, the latest is Mark Helfrich with the Bears. But again, if you want our analysis of that, go check out that podcast. Eric, I'm curious to hear what you think of the Norv Turner-Cam Newton pairing. To me, on its surface, it seems a little odd.
Yeah, fascinating stuff. I mean, obviously, you know, Norv ran that Eric Coryell sort of vertical system and everything, and you know, I don't believe, I'd have to sit there and think about it a little bit, but I don't think he's really had anything close to a quarterback with Cam's skill set. Now, obviously, Ron Rivera's comfort level with him, having worked with him in San Diego, and you know, just Norv's track record obviously speak for themselves. And the word from Turner's camp is that as soon as he was let go out of Minnesota, he was already surveying the rest of the league and trying to figure out where his next job was. It's not a man who was ready to just sort of walk off into the sunset, as it were. So I know he visited a lot of teams during training camp this year. That probably played into it, but, you know, his familiarity there. But, yeah, how is he going to unleash Cam in a better way that, you know, Mike Shula and company could not, and obviously caused a couple staff changes there?
Just to make sure I'm being clear, I have the utmost respect for Norv Turner. He's actually a friend of this program, and his track record speaks for itself in the NFL. So
yeah,
when I say odd pairing, he's just, you know, he's an older gentleman, and Cam Newton is obviously just a different type of quarterback, as you alluded to. I don't think he's ever had that dual threat before, so I guess that feeds the fascination as to how Norv is going to adjust what he does with the vertical downfield offense and try and tailor what he does to Cam's strengths. The reason that Mike Shula isn't there anymore and Ken Dorsey aren't there anymore, Cam Newton's development as a passer has been sort of arrested, if you will, and Christian McCaffrey, I think maybe there was some disappointment in Charlotte in not, you know, the numbers are fine. He had caught 80 balls, and he did improve a little bit as a runner.
Yep.
But when you look at Alvin Kamara in the same division and the way Sean Payton is using that ball of clay, it may be left a little bit to be desired with the 8th overall pick in McCaffrey.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, there's so much to look at in this division. It was such a fascinating division this whole year and everything, too, and really competitive, the most wins of any division, too. So I think the Panthers can take that next step, and I think McCaffrey and Olsen have to be the big beneficiaries here. Obviously, Newton, too, as well. And, I mean, if he can get to that Phillip Rivers level of completion percentage, that 64-65 level that Cam always seems to be coming up short of, he's a, you know, what, a 58
career. Let's get him to 60 first, right?
Yeah, past 60.
Yes.
Then you can get the speeding ticket. Right, exactly. Yeah, but, I mean, we haven't – I don't know if – you know, it's kind of an apples and oranges thing. It's like, well, Phillip Rivers is a really accurate quarterback. Cam is a little erratic. And
right.
That's a little overplayed. But, like, can the system and Norv's teaching help him become 5, 6, 7% better? We'll see. You know, that's a tough ask. I mean, but he's got amazing skills. There's no question.
Yeah, and Cam, you know, he had a good season. His best year as a runner, almost 1,000 yards, 870 yards, something like that.
Yep.
And he largely carried them down the stretch. So I don't want to, you know, I don't want to sell him short either. Had a nice season, but it will be interesting to see how this develops.
Who's their deep threat? That's what they need, a Ted Ginn. That's what, you know what I mean? They don't, San Diego always, they had those, and they just don't really have that.
And they had so much turnover in the wide receiving core with injuries, and it seemed like just as they were starting to get guys going a little bit, they were getting hurt later in the season. Obviously, they traded Kelvin Benjamin. He was never going to be a deep threat, but work to do there for sure. And of course, it was David Gettleman's belief Marty Herney's belief there that they wanted to add speed into the mix by getting rid of Kelvin Benjamin and seeing if that would open things up. So we'll keep an eye on what's going on in Charlotte. Eric, I also have to ask you again, there's been moves everywhere, and we want to talk playoffs too, so we're not going to get to all of them, but John Gruden's building a staff in Oakland. Tell me about that for a minute, and then we'll stay near there geographically because we have to talk about what's going on in Seattle as well.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Gruden, I think a lot of people felt like, look, this is a guy who's been out of the league, you know, 8-9 years, whatever it's been. He's got to make sure he surrounds himself with good people. That's, you know, that's an important development right there. And I think that was one of the things a lot of people were kind of watching to see. Okay, who would he get and all that stuff. So, you know, to see him come back in and I think make some good hires, maybe not as sexy or as interesting as the Bears hires, but, you know, Greg Olsen obviously is somebody who has had some success in this league. And, you know, there's also been some rumors of possibly the Raiders going after some of the Alabama coaching staff, too, and looking to them to fill out some pieces as well. It would be an interesting mix of established NFL veterans that they have and also some college guys who have maybe a different perspective there. I don't know. We'll have to see when it's fully completed. I don't think he's put a cap on everything yet. I don't think he's only announced
the coordinators. Just the coordinators. Paul Gunther, Greg Olsen, and then I always screw up the pronunciation. Is it Bisaccia?
Richard Bisaccia.
Bisaccia, excuse me.
Who he's known from back in Tampa.
Won a Super Bowl with
Gruden. Right. He was Bisaccia was an assistant head coach, a running back coach, and a special teams coach when he was there. And Paul Gunther, I think, did a really good job, all things considered, with the Cincinnati's D and everybody they didn't have.
I like Gunther a lot, and I think that in Gruden, in his introductory press conference, he talked about the importance of filling out the staff, but then he kind of highlighted those guys in particular and talked about Gunther's ability, the even front that gets up the field and just gets after you. You know, Mike Zimmer and obviously from that mold as well. So I think that is going to serve them well. I always wanted to see the Raiders be a little bit more aggressive defensively the past couple years under Jack Del Rio. So we'll see how that comes together. And Eric, before we get to the playoffs, the Seattle Seahawks have fired both of their coordinators in Darrell Bevell and Chris Richard. They've done it a little later, too. We just got this news, I want to say Wednesday, about 10 days after the season ended. And there's a lot to unpack here. We knew that there was going to be huge changes personnel-wise, particularly to that legion of boom where maybe Cam Chancellor doesn't return. Who knows about Richard Sherman even up front, Cliff Averill. I mean, Michael Bennett maybe even. You could be a lot of the most recognizable faces on that defense we expected to potentially get shipped out. But what's your reaction to hearing Darrell Bevell and Chris Richard also won't be back in Seattle?
And Tom Cable, the O-line coach.
Thank you, and Tom Cable. Right.
And another guy who's at least, you know, infamous. I don't know but what the word is. But, yeah, I mean, obviously there's been a lot of question about the O-line. So, I mean, I'm fine with changing coaches, even those guys have been together a long time. I know, you know, they've had a few different defensive coordinators, but, you know, Darrell Bevell was there, 7 years as OC, I think. So that was a surprise. Cable had been, you know, I think he interviewed for the Colts head job. So you're only as good as the guys you replace them with. I mean, they don't upgrade if they don't bring back Gus Bradley, let's say, or if they don't have somebody that they have earmarked ready to take over the play calling duties in those respects, then I'm not behind it. You know, if Pete Carroll's just making changes to make changes, I don't know. So we'll see. Who do they bring in? That's a big question right now.
Yeah, we know it won't be Gus Bradley. Of course, he's going back to the Chargers, officially locked up.
I did not know
Ken
that.
Wisenhunt.
Okay.
But no, I mean, I agree with you. And the fact that they got maybe a little bit of a later start, it does seem that there's a good chance. I think I saw a report, I apologize, I don't remember who had it, that maybe Steve Sarkisian would be a possibility. Of course, was under Pete Carroll at USC.
Yeah.
And then maybe could be a one and done in Atlanta to skip coast, switch coasts and go out to the Pacific Northwest. That would be interesting.
And Dan Quinn, rather, shot that down as quickly as
he
could. Okay. But you never know. I mean, right, obviously if Sark's not feeling the love there in Atlanta and he can find find a way out of his contract. That could happen. You know, Brian Schottenheimer's name has come up, the Colts QB coach, former OC at a couple teams. So we'll see. I mean, they obviously have some different ideas, and they want to bring some fresh perspectives in there for Russell Wilson and company, because Wilson's going to have to carry this team again next year, as you said, with all the changes we think are coming.
Yeah, you may even see the whole identity sort of shift a little bit. If all these stars are leaving on defense, maybe they become a little bit more offensive driven team. Of course, Pete Carroll has a defensive background, but we'll just have to wait and see. It's going to be interesting. It seemed like maybe there was a changing, I mean, technically there was, because the Rams won the West or whatever, but it kind of felt like maybe even a bigger changing of the guard out there. And I don't think that all these early on switches to the coaching staff and what's ahead will really change some people's opinion of that. So a lot more news to get to, but we're going to switch gears, Eric. There's an exciting divisional round weekend ahead, and rather than go game by game, I guess maybe we'll end up going game by game, but which one excites you the most, and where should we start here in your opinion?
I think, of course, it's the last game of the weekend. I think Saints-Vikings has a chance to be a pretty good game. I mean, that could end up being maybe the closest, tensest, most exciting game. I mean, we certainly could see a good one in the first one, right? We could see the Falcons knock off the Eagles. We could see the Eagles make a great defensive stand. Tennessee, New England, you know, I would say is the least compelling of the four, just from the outset, on the outside looking in. Jacksonville, Pittsburgh, look, I still think maybe we're pushing the Steelers through too quick. If Bortles doesn't play, if he plays turnover-free ball, they're going to have a chance. That defense will keep him in it. But to me, Vikings-Saints, I just think carries a little more heft than maybe the other ones do.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you. Not so much because it's Drew Brees versus Case Keenum, obviously, but maybe because it's Drew Brees in that offense versus the Vikings' historically
right.
good defense. This
yep.
is the best third down defense since the NFL started keeping the statistics since
wow,
1991.
Is that right? No kidding.
25% third down efficiency. It's remarkable. I don't think another team was under 30, actually, so it wasn't close. And the record that they broke, it was the 1991 Saints.
Wow.
That would have been, I don't know.
Vaughn Johnson, Sam Mills.
Well, it was the Dome
Pat
Patrol.
Swilling,
exactly.
Right.
And I'm trying to remember who. I just know Vic Fangio was the linebacker coach.
Oh, he
but
was.
I'm not
you're
sure
right.
Who was above
sure,
him.
He was there.
And it was the Vikings' dominant Week 17 performance versus the Bears that helped them clinch that record.
Oh, is
so
that
kind
right?
of funny connections there. I wonder
Good
if
history
Vic,
lesson.
Yeah, I
like
wonder
that.
If Vic was aware of all that when he was watching his offense struggle in the finale and what could end up being his final game with the Bears, although it's looking like maybe that won't be the case.
I was a fan of that team. I liked watching, I grew up in New England and stuff, and we had the Patriots, and I was kind of a Bears fan too as a young man, but like watching those teams, I'm just kind of looking through some of these. Dom Capers is the DB coach.
There
how about
you
that? You
yep.
know, and obviously he and Vic have known each other for a long time. Yeah, that was a good crew that Jim Mora put together there. Bobby Hebert, Steve Walsh were the quarterbacks. How about that?
I was 9 years old, and yet I still remember Ricky Jackson and Pat Swilling. That was a
oh my
fearsome connection, and I don't know what the numbers were that year, but
they were
those
stupid,
guys
is what
got
they were.
After the passers.
Yep.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. But this will be an interesting one. Everyone already knows the whole narrative. The Vikings have a chance to not leave the state of Minnesota all the way up until a potential appearance in Super Bowl 52. Everyone also knows, Eric, that the Vikings – They punched the Saints in the mouth in Week 1. They really did. That was Sam Bradford and Dalvin Cook accounting for 350-plus yards and
yep.
three touchdowns. Of course, those guys are long gone, and maybe that's why it's not getting revisited a ton this week. But there are some things that we need to mention. Adam Thielen, Stephon Diggs had big games. The Vikings' defense absolutely shut down the Saints' running game, although the running game was still being held back by Adrian Peterson's sort of third wheel, if you will, until Peterson and Kamara fully ignited.
Yep.
But just there's gonna be a lot of great matchups in this one. Of course, Sean Payton and Mike Zimmer, former assistants in Dallas.
Absolutely.
There's so much in this game that's going to be worth looking forward to.
Yeah, you're right about it. My favorite stat from that first game. It's not really a stat, but the Saints had a personnel issue and they opened with 10 men on defense. You know, and I thought at the time, I said, "Oh my gosh, this is going to be this is going to be the end of the Sean Payton era." We're going to talk about that moment as like the, you know, oh, we knew it was going to be off to a bad start here.
Yep.
But obviously after that game and then after the next week against New England,
right.
Saints were just miserable on third down. Their defense took a turn and got a lot better. Did it maybe take a little step back when Alex Okafor went down, A.J. Klein got hurt, Lattimore missed a few games?
Kenny
Absolutely.
Kenny Vaccaro, too. Is a
Kenny
big,
Vaccaro,
his
good,
absence.
Good one, yep. And so they lost a few guys. Dennis Allen has held it together pretty well. Did they get a little lucky last week? Yes, but you know, there was obviously a great blitz call there at the end, and yeah, I think they're going to be a lot better defending third downs and having an idea of when the Vikings are going to throw the ball. I mean, that's obviously the key, because I'm not saying I don't believe in Latavius Murray. He's fine, but you're not exactly game planning to stop him, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would agree with that, especially not when you have a defensive MVP candidate in Cam Jordan, who's just all over the field.
Insane, yep.
He was unbelievable last week. And look, the Panthers marched in between the 20s, obviously, 400-plus yards of offense, and that frenzied comeback that fell just short. But the Saints were pretty darn good in the red zone, and that was good enough to help them advance. So.
You know what was kind of crazy? I did not realize. Kamara actually led them in rushing attempts that day, but it was with seven. He had
in
seven.
Week one?
What's that?
Way back in week one.
In week one.
I didn't
seven for
that.
18,
wow.
Long of five. Peterson, 6 for 18, long of 9. Mark Ingram, 6 for 17, long of 6. It's like a totally different team now, and what they've done with those guys. And, you know, Ingram did some work in the receiving game, but the other guys didn't really do that much. So, yeah, completely different sort of profile now.
And obviously, the Saints' adaptability on offense, that was a treat to watch Drew Brees. And not that Brees hasn't been great all year. He set the single season. He took back his own single season completion percentage record. He was awesome, but he also had his fewest attempts in a full season as a Saint. Well, they needed him more last week because Carolina was determined to take away those backs. And Drew Brees, just absolutely brilliant. That was really just a ton of fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, Hill was his guy there for a few drives.
Right.
And it's like, you know, we know about Michael Thomas.
Ginn
was awesome.
Yep.
Yeah, pick your poison. Okay, you're going to shut down their run? Great. Then Drew Brees, Hall of Fame quarterback with, you know, still slinging it at age, 40 now, I guess, or whatever, 39?
30, late 30s for
sure. Yeah, so, yeah, that's going to be the chore right there. And I think interior quickness off the line, you know, and seeing some of those Vikings defensive linemen, they go deep and they have talent up front. If they can, I think what Brees has been bothered by is like A-gap pressure in the past,
oh, yeah,
too.
No
so.
Doubt.
That could be a key right
the
there.
The Vikings specialty.
Yeah, exactly. What they do best.
That's a great point.
Got Linval and those guys, yep.
This is the Pro Football Weekly podcast. He is Eric. I am Arthur. We got our producer, Dan Mott, in the WCIU studios. And we are talking divisional round weekend for about another 10-15 minutes here with you all. And, Eric, let's go from the last game of the weekend back to the first one, because Atlanta, I think, was probably the most convincing team in wild card round weekend. They've been very hot. They may be, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think they're as hot as any team in the NFL. And they go to Philadelphia. A dome team goes to the Northeast. I think that part of the story maybe hasn't been getting enough.
Sure.
That maybe is going to help this one be a little bit closer. But just your level of confidence in the Eagles, Nick Foles' Eagles, and Jim Schwartz's somewhat struggling defense at the end of the season, welcoming in the Falcons as hot as they are.
I could be wrong. And maybe I'm misreading this, and I'm going a little against the tide here. I feel like Schwartz has been sitting back there listening to he's going to be a head coaching candidate, hasn't gotten the same kind of buzz that he did a month or two ago. I believe only interviewed for one job, if I'm not mistaken.
The Giants, I think, right?
Did the Giants end up – okay, they did end up interviewing. Doesn't sound like he's a favorite. And so Arizona, too. So that's two teams. So
I could be wrong about
that. Yeah, I know. I think you are right. I think eventually they did talk to him, so okay. It's hard to keep track. But,
yep. You
know, like you said, they tailed off a little bit on that side of the ball towards the end of the season. You know, all this talk about Nick Foles, he's terrible. He can't, you know, they can't convert third downs. They've been sitting there just stewing for 13 days,
yeah.
Or they will when kickoff comes. And I wouldn't be shocked if that defensive front kind of takes over this game a little bit and closes the run game off early and pressures Ryan when he's in those third and eights and stuff. So do I think it's enough to win? We'll see. I have a feeling the Eagles are not going to go away as quietly as everyone assumes they will.
Yeah, I think you're probably right, and we should take a moment to credit Eric. I believe Eric did predict the upset last week with the Falcons going into Los Angeles.
I did. I said 27-24. I didn't think it would be as wide a gap, but that's right. Yeah.
Well, that was well done, and I'm not putting words in his mouth here. I will get a prediction from Eric in a moment, but you know, Aaron Donald wore out that Falcons offensive line last week. They survived, but now you go from Aaron Donald to Fletcher Cox in this wide nine arrangement. So
yep.
let's not look past that, because if they're going to focus their attention on Tim Jernigan and Fletcher Cox on the outside, well, then Jake Matthews and Ryan Schrader, they're going to have their hands full with those edge rushers as well. We'll see what this Eagles secondary looks like. It's been largely a work in progress all season. It's like they've got that safety net with the great safeties, but some questions at corner, and they're going to have a real good plan, of course, for Julio and Mohamed Sanu and the rest of those dudes.
But they've got some length, though, which I like. You know, you've got Rasul Douglas, you've got Ronald Darby, and you've got Sidney Jones if you want to use them.
Yep. Yeah, and Jalen Mills, too.
Yeah, Mills is part of that pack, two sort of physical safeties. So I think they can be smart about how they cover Julio. I'd be fine with Mohamed Sanu catching eight ball. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not so worried about Hooper or any of those guys. I would make someone else beat me in that regard.
Yeah, I agree with that, although we should add that Mohamed Sanu did have really the play of the game last week in the fourth quarter on that quick bubble screen that he took down to the red zone. So, Eric, I think I know which way you're going on this. You said it's going to be close, so I think we agree on that, but are you going with the favorite, or do you think the underdogs come through?
I think the Eagles are going to win 20-17. Now, let's go a little higher than that. About 23-20, about that. Am I super confident that Nick Foles is going to lead 3, 4, 5 scoring drives and be what Wentz was? No, of course not. But, you know, whether it's a turnover, whether it's a big play early in the game on special teams or something like that, I think that crowd is going to be nasty, fired up. They've been disrespected. This team is better than just one player, as good as Carson Wentz is. So I kind of like the Eagles a little bit. All right, it's out there. Whatever.
Nice. I'm not as brave as Eric.
That's fine. I like that.
I'm picking Atlanta, but I do think it's going to be close as well. I'll say 21-17. I'm never even close with the scores. Hopefully we'll get the prediction right. All right, we've only got a couple more minutes, Eric, but I think we did get to the two better games. The AFC ones feel both like David versus Goliath, in my opinion, but what would be the recipe for Mike Mularkey's Titans to pull off one of the bigger upsets I think we would have seen in the playoffs in the past handful of years?
Yeah, it's funny. I did Nashville radio this morning. I think the host used almost the same phrasing. He said something like, it's a roadmap to success. And I said, well, I think it involves Derrick Henry and using your power up front to outflank and outnumber the Patriots. They've been, you know, they've been really kind of light up front all year. I know they get Branch back, or they seem to be getting Branch back this week, and maybe Harrison's good against the run. But I still think they have an advantage there, and I still think they're going to have a hard time covering Gronk on every play. He may not have 9 catches in this game, but he'll have at least 3 or 4 impactful ones. So it's tough, but slowing down Gronk, using a corner on him maybe, and then also on offense, Derrick Henry and that good offensive line.
Yeah, you made a great point just a little while ago on our Chicago Football Now TV show and mentioning that Travis Kelce was just shredding that Titans defense before he gets hit high by Jonathan Cyprian, concussed out of the game, and then obviously that Chiefs offense, it went in the tank in the second half. So the Gronk factor can't be understated. I think Chris Hogan, too. Chris Hogan's getting healthier.
Forgot about him.
It's easy to forget what a big impact he was making when he was healthy. So someone else to keep an eye on here. And then, of course, always those Patriots. Backs as receivers are a threat that Tennessee will have to worry about. And Eric also had mentioned on the TV show had issues in the regular season covering backs out of the backfield. So before we get to Jacksonville, Pittsburgh, can the Titans cover? It's 13.5, point total of 48 here, Eric.
They can, but they won't. So 30-14 New England. 28-14. They just missed covering. How about that?
All right. I'm going to go 31-17.
Okay.
Patriots, so also just missed covering. These scores were just kind of picking, at least I'm
gamblers, please don't take
spot.
My advice.
Right, but I think we do both envision the Patriots rolling here. And then, Eric, the other AFC game, everyone knows Big Ben threw 5 interceptions. The Jaguars stomped the Steelers 30-9 at Heinz Field in Week 5.
Yada, yada, yada.
Yep, a lot has changed for these teams. You know, it's funny, Blake Bortles was absolutely awful last week, but he didn't turn the ball over.
Yeah.
And maybe, not maybe. That needs to happen again, because any extra possessions for these Steelers and kind of taking away your own great strength in your defense is not what the Jaguars can afford.
And it's hard for him. Obviously, he's got some limitations there. But, yeah, when he started missing those early screens and stuff, it was like, oh gosh, you know. To the credit of the Jags, they did come out in the second half, open up. The coaching staff did a nice job, at least I think, kind of shaking off some of that rust. And his legs were, you know, kind of the difference. He ran for 88 yards. He probably won't do that again, but I think his scrambling will help him. And if they give him some kind of receivers who can open up and give him an option or two, I don't think he'll be as bad. But yeah, like you said, playing clean football is super important. He doesn't have to throw for 300 yards. I think it's fine if he plays a cleaner game and throws for 180 or something like that. I'm okay with that.
Are the Steelers – this is probably even more of a question for next week, and gosh, now we're already really looking past the Jaguars. But I'm curious, Eric, your level of confidence in the Steelers without Ryan Shazier? It's been a while now, but do you think that the defense has managed to adjust enough for you to feel comfortable in what they're going to roll out? Again, not necessarily versus the Jaguars, but just if this is going to be a Super Bowl Steelers
yeah,
team.
No, it's obviously tough, and that's a huge one. And I think, you know, him coming back to practice obviously gave him an emotional lift. But as far as finding the personnel to do all those things, I mean, they just don't have anybody with his speed and his tracking ability, I think, in the middle of that defense. So I do worry about that a little. You know, maybe against a team like the Patriots that have backs and tight ends who catch the ball. So, I still think the Steelers can go win it all, but I'm a little bit leery about that whole thing.
All right, prediction time. It sounds like, again, we'll be going with the favorites on both sides of the AFC. Eric, do you have a trivial score to throw out there before I do the same?
Yeah, I feel like this game is not going to be 30-9, I think, but it is going to be one of those odd scores or something like that. So I'll say 22-16 Steelers. I don't know. I just have a feeling there's going to be some strangeness in this one, so that's why I pick a kind of an oddball score.
All right, yeah, and we're largely on the same page in that the Steelers' offense with a limited Antonio Brown, we didn't even mention him,
right,
just 3 weeks removed from a partially torn calf.
Yep.
I don't think he's going to be the usual Antonio Brown we're used to. They're not just going to dominate this Jaguars defense that no one's dominated all season. So I'm going to say the Steelers come up with 24 points, which is still decent, but I'm going to say there's a Blake Bortles turnover or two contributing to
mm-hmm.
that. Jaguars 13. So the Steelers win comfortably
okay.
in cover. And that'll wrap up divisional round weekend. It's going to be a ton of fun. And Eric, when we talk to everyone, well, no, I guess we've got what? Another week. We'll have one more podcast from here before we head down to Senior Bowl. We're starting to, we've got Mobile in our sights now.
Right. Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to that and maybe getting a little barbecue while we're down there. But
yes.
Yeah, no, if you know, there are players that you guys want us to take a look at specifically, please let us know and keep tuning in. We always appreciate you guys checking us out. It's been a lot of fun this season, and we're getting towards the end, and a lot more in front of us, though.
Yeah, that's a great call. I don't feel like we've done that often, but yeah, if you guys ever have questions for Eric or myself, hit us up on Twitter. Follow us on Twitter as well. We'd love to interact and get that podcast going this way. So we appreciate you guys so much. And again, one more time, just head to iTunes and make sure you're subscribed to the Pro Football Weekly podcast. And we'll be back next week to talk conference title games. It should be a ton of fun here on the Pro Football Weekly podcast.